Live. Dr. J, what's going on?
Top of the day to you, brother. All good. First round of patients behind us.
How was your morning?
Steady, real steady. Lots of good people. Learned a few things, which is always good.
Did you focus mainly on adjusting this morning, or did you have any nutrition patients, or was it a little bit of all of the above?
A little bit of all of the above. We had some plantar fasciitis, chronic case, and that was really good. And always some nutrition in there. Mostly spinal, couple wrists. Let's see, some headache work this morning. Occasional sciatica as well.
We got a couple topics on the docket for the day. One that I wanted to ask you about, we touched on it a little bit in the last pod. You mentioned that really nobody can tolerate gluten very well. So what is gluten? Where is it found? And what is the problem with it?
Gluten is a protein that's found in grains. And the major problem being that it's become so toxic. 1985, because of the problem with world hunger, they actually changed grains. It's no longer that 4-foot amber grain that you hear in the song. It's now actually a 2-foot dwarf. They changed it as GMO, and the intention was to save the world hunger, which they happened to do, by the way, the famine that was occurring at that time. But however, with this new form of wheat, it's a 2-foot dwarf, they're able to harvest it twice as often. However, it contains about 4 times the toxic gluten that was found in the wheat prior to. And of course, now if you're in the grocery store, most of the pasta and other grains that you're buying, if you'll notice in the box, they don't even come in the plastic bag anymore. If you're old enough to remember when they used to be packaged that way, well, now because of the fact there's no nutrition in that, they can't even get the mice in the warehouses to touch it, much less the boll weevil anymore. So it is now a dead food that is, again, very toxic to the intestinal tract of our body.
What are some symptoms of gluten sensitivity or a non-celiac gluten sensitivity? Yeah. when you're not actually celiac, but you still don't tolerate it well?
Right. And full-blown celiac is actually, I wouldn't say rare, but sensitivity to gluten in just about everybody. And most people are not getting treated with anything that's just the side of full-blown celiac. Another thing that occurred after the change of the wheat in 1985 is that your autonomic disorders, MS, lupus, a lot of our skin disorders went through the roof. So you can find a direct correlation between most of these 200% increase in autonomic disorders associated with gluten, leaky gut syndrome. And then another common disorder that we see is all the IBS and other digestive conditions associated with gluten these days. Skin disorders as well. And just about anything associated with gluten and any type of inflammatory condition is going to be made worse by the consumption of these wheats and grains and cereals that we're consuming today.
So you'd say that the common denominator for all these conditions that we're talking about here is inflammation. So it would be fair to say that the consumption of gluten on a regular basis increases the systemic inflammatory load of the body, which is going to predispose the body to
just about any inflammatory condition we're dealing with now. Everything from knee pain, shoulder pain, joint pain. Then we have inflammation within the cardiovascular system affected by this. We have inflammation within the gut. And a lot of these inflammatory conditions that we're trying to get under control, including, if you will, even syndrome X that we're dealing with now, metabolic syndrome, these are all aggravated, complicated. Even sleep apnea has a correlation associated with the side effects of inflammation. So there's not very much out there that will not benefit from decreasing our consumption of the gluten that's in our diet today.
So if someone has been consuming a lot of gluten through something like eating a standard American diet, the SAD, SAD, mm-hmm. would you typically put a patient through an elimination diet to flush that out and let their body normalize? Or would you recommend that they just simply stop eating the gluten and let your body do its thing?
Good point. However, if it was that easy, we would have had it done a long time ago. I usually try to educate them first. And then from that point, what I want to do is try to ease them out of that, because sad but true, there's a thing that's found in a lot of the wheat today that are called zorphanes, and those just happen to rhyme with morphine, which does the same thing as the morphine. Crosses the blood-brain barrier, attaches to receptor sites that makes you go looking for that zorphane every few hours. So it's sometimes it's as difficult as trying to stop another addiction cold turkey. It requires baby steps sometimes. In order to keep the compliance up, we have to start small. A 21-day detox is a good place to start. Usually the patient is feeling much better after the first week, because just like anything else that you're trying to cut back on, sometimes you're going to have an adverse reaction to that, and you have a couple of sluggish days. It's getting through that and staying the course that makes all the difference in the world. And I think a lot of times with people, if you tell them, we're going to do 90 days, they just can't see it. It's hard to grasp. So let's just go small, and we'll get this thing done one step at a time. That's the approach I usually take. Once they start seeing the benefit, then it's a lot easier to be compliant.
Talking about issues like IBS and Crohn's and autoimmune issues and a lot of these other inflammatory conditions has me thinking about fasting. Yeah, and I'm not talking about intermittent fasting, you know, where you have maybe an 8-hour window throughout the day where you take in all your calories at that time and allow your body to rest and allow your digestive system to take a break for the rest of the day. I'm talking about long-term water fasting, and that's something that I do recommend patients a good bit, and I get a lot of questions about. I think about it like this. So your body produces energy throughout the day, right? A lot of that energy goes to your brain. A lot of it goes towards the digestive system. When you essentially shut the digestive system off by stopping the intake of calories in general and just drinking water, then your body has maybe 40% more energy to direct towards other processes that maybe have been neglected for some time, such as healing. You can heal parts of your body that have been neglected because you can redirect that energy that would be going to the digestive system towards healing issues of the gut lining and things like that. There's a guy by the name of Lauren Lachman, and you can find him on YouTube. I think it's called the Tanglewood Wellness Center in Costa Rica, and he takes a lot of patients through really long-term fasts. I think I've heard him fasting patients up to 30, 40 days. When you have a lot of body fat, you can't starve. Correct. Because in each pound of fat, you got 3,500 calories. So if the average intake recommendation each day is 2,000 calories, and you got 3,500 calories and 1 pound of fat, you're good to go. So if you have 50 pounds of fat hanging around on your body, you could go for months without eating and still never run out of calories. As far as water fasting, I think the most that I've ever done was 10 days, and that was definitely a challenge.
And on that fast, you're talking about consumption of just water by itself.
Just
right?
Water.
Right.
No food, no lemonade, no maple syrup, no cayenne pepper, none
straight
of the Beyonce
stuff. Straight up H2O.
That's it.
Is there a water you prefer for that fasting over others?
Yeah, especially if I'm going to do a fast where I'm trying to reset my body, I'm only drinking 100% natural spring water. Water that came straight from the earth. You're going to think I'm making this up, but there's a website called findaspring.com, and you can punch in your location. It'll direct you to the nearest natural springs where you can take jugs of water.
Which he does, yes.
I do this. The only water I drink, my wife and I go every 6 weeks to Springville, Alabama, and fill up about 75 gallons of water. We only drink that. You can taste a huge difference in this water, I'm telling you. When I go to a restaurant, I don't even drink the tap water because there's so much BS in that water. I don't want to take it into my body. We could talk about fluoride. Fluoride's great for your teeth, terrible for your body.
does not belong in your water. They will not even allow them to dump it into the ground.
Do you know what they give patients who have a hyperactive thyroid, hyperthyroidism? They give fluoride to slow down the function of the thyroid. So think about this. If fluoride slows down the function of the thyroid, could it cause obesity if it's found in the tap water and you're drinking enough of it?
If you look at the thyroid conditions we're associated with today, when we're seeing 17-year-olds starting to develop hypothyroid conditions, think about this. That thyroid has a halogen receptor site in it, and that receptor site is made for iodine. Now, of the halogens, the iodine is the most important for the thyroid. Are we getting iodine in our diet? No. Did they take that out of bread? Yes, they did. Did they take it out of salt? Yes, they did. So the other halogens that we are getting are all toxins. One of the primary ones are fluoride, the other one being chlorine and bromine. So if my thyroid has the halogen receptor site, which I also found the highest in the ovaries and the breast tissue and the prostate, then it's not getting that halogen it wants, and instead it's getting that fluoride toxin in the water or in the toothpaste, causing a toxicity because they are very toxic. And now I'm burning out my thyroid function with a toxin of fluorine.
Because fluoride and iodine compete for receptor sites in the thyroid. I think we talked about this the other day. We both take iodine daily, right?
Correct.
I like Lugol solution. Isn't there a standard process version
standard
that you
process,
like?
Standard process, yes.
What's that called?
That is bromelain iodine.
Bromelain iodine.
Which is 3 micrograms per tablet.
So correct. By taking oral iodine, you could essentially protect your thyroid from fluoride.
That's correct. That way, those receptor sites are being picked up by the very mineral that it wants, and that is the iodine. However, most of us are so deficient that even maybe 50 milligrams a day would not be enough to adequately fill up the reserves.
Micrograms, right?
Micrograms.
Right.
To fill up the reserves necessary to offset the damage that is being done by the fluorine and the chlorine. As you think about it, most people don't have a filter on their shower. So a 10-minute shower is the equivalent of drinking, they say, about 10 8-ounce glasses.
So your skin absorbs substances like chlorine,
even more
fluoride.
So than if you take it through the mouth, because you know, if some people are fortunate enough to still have acid in their stomach, well, then the acid is breaking that down to a degree. That's a whole nother story with acid reflux and the lack of acid. But if it goes onto the skin, we get it in there that much quicker.
So what about swimming in a pool?
Same thing. Absolutely, positively. I mean, where is it not around you these days? And they're all toxins. We know that, you know, fluorine is actually considered more toxic than lead. I think lead is a grade 4 toxicity and fluoride is a grade 5 or something like that. So think about what we're actually consuming. We know lead's bad for us, and it is on a lower scale than fluoride is. And then if you look at the area of the country with the highest dental, what do they call that?
Caries.
Caries. The highest level of that is found in a country that has the highest fluoride content in the water, and that would be Ireland. So, well, I'm just saying, there's your proof, maybe.
So we live in an environment where it's impossible to escape the absorption of environmental toxins, right? Does Standard Process make any types of detox kits or programs that you recommend?
Yeah, Standard Process makes some great ones. And you know what? People ask me that all the time. Well, you know, why do I need a detox? Well, my God, I mean, who doesn't? I prefer a systemic all-over detox. Some people go for the liver themselves. Some people may isolate the kidney, and that's okay too. Sometimes those can be rather excessive on the body. I like systemically when all possible, but you know, we have to look at the filter systems, the liver and the kidney, and they're going to take probably a major hit here. But my theory behind that is that some people might do a detox once a year, maybe twice a year. But yes, Standard Process has quite a few, and I know you're familiar with some that are outside of Standard Process as well.
What is one of the Standard Process ones that you recommend? Can you think of it off the top of your head?
They have what's called a 21-day cleanse, and this encompasses a protein supplement as well as 3 other products that you consume over a 21-day period.
And what do they actually do?
Well, when I say systemic, I'm talking about the whole body. I'm talking about every organ within the body. We're detoxing the whole system, if we will. We're putting it through a cleanse process. And you're changing the diet very minimally. And a lot of people wind up losing, you know, over that period, maybe 10 pounds, which is sort of a side effect of being healthy. That's just, we're just doing the right thing. And sometimes they'll even come to me and say, hey, that was fantastic. Can I do it again? And I kind of chuckle because after the 21 days, you pretty much got it down now. That's just stay that course or as close to it as you possibly can.
Yeah, you don't want to just forward. Go back to the way things were before, right? Why? Because that's what got you where you are
exactly.
now. So you want to
yes.
use it as a kickstart.
And now you know how. That's the other thing, too, with kids. You know, educate them. When they know, then they're in control. And I think that's so important for us. I think one of the things that frustrates us more than anything is there's so many different things to do out there. You hear this diet, you hear that diet, you hear this opinion, and then, you know, low fat, no fat, high fat, where do we go? Liver detox, kidney detox, intestinal detox. It gets frustrating. Educate your patients and your people as best you possibly can. Therefore, they're more equipped to make the right decisions and there's less frustration on their part. And also, I think people want to be held accountable, but they lack the knowledge because with that comes control and comes power. And I think everybody wants to be empowered. When we're not, we're frustrated and that's stressful. So if we can eliminate the stress, that's gonna help a lot.
Going through a 21-day cleanse, what would be some of the benefits? I know that when I've put patients through detox programs before, that some of the biggest changes they've noticed are a decrease in brain fog. They're just able to think more clearly. They sleep better. You talked about weight loss. They feel like they have less joint pain. And obviously, joint pain is something you and I deal with the majority of the time. And if just by decreasing systemic inflammation, you can reduce joint pain. I mean, that's stuff that people need to know, but most people don't make the connection that your diet can determine a lot about your pain levels and how you're feeling throughout the day.
Absolutely. You know, let's look at the, you know, commercial on television for psoriatic arthritis. What do we have here? We have skin conditions, eruptions in the skin, and of course, we also have painful joints. But they're both caused by the same thing. It's an inflammatory condition. Like the 21-day cleanse, even my dermatologist, I remember asking him with a couple of problems I had with some eczema, you know, and I asked him, what do you think this is? And he says, well, you know, the skin. I asked him, what's the etiology? What causes this? And he was sort of like, well, it's the skin. You know, some we really don't know. So me, I've got to go pull out a Merck manual and I've got to go find this thing myself. So I look it up. I find that particular eczema and I look under etiology and it says unknown. Well, I can tell you. Cleanse yourself for 21 days and watch it disappear. So in my case, it was I was a little too much stress on my liver to handle that. And so it has to come out somewhere. So mine was finding the skin as its exit.
This episode is brought to you by Standard Process. Standard Process recognizes the negative impact that the standard American diet has on our overall health. They believe that processed foods deplete our food sources of the rich nutrition once found in them. Standard Process understands that good health comes from good nutrition, and the best nutrition comes from whole foods. They dedicate their time to perfecting the production of whole food-based supplements, from the soil used to grow crops to the manufacturing processes used to create the supplement. They have always focused on putting vitality into every bottle, and that's why we recommend Standard Process 21-Day Purification Program to our patients. If your body could use a reset, order your program today at us.fullscript.com/welcome/podcast. Because the liver and skin have a strong connection, right?
There's a detox somewhere. And if it's not going out through your filter system, it's going to go out through somewhere. And in this case, it's going to be the skin. So we see the same thing with a lot of our patients that we're dealing with eczema and psoriasis. There's a strong link to gluten in their diet big time because a lot of times with the cleanse, that just clears right up. And they may stay away from that for a couple of years and they'll come back in and they have another flare up. And I'll ask them straight up, are you back on the bread? And they admit they are. Well, there again, they're educated enough to know better. It's easier enough for them to back off and do what got it done for them the first time. Doesn't mean we're not going to cheat from time to time. That's life. But at least if we have some education, it's easier for us to do the right thing take the responsibility to do what we need to do to eliminate those symptoms, if you will. Because sometimes when we have inflammation on the outside, we don't always necessarily know what's going on the inside until we find out. And often that can be detrimental, sometimes a little too late to turn around as quickly as if we're taking care of what's going on the outside.
What would you say are some of the first, maybe the early warning signs of some of these inflammatory issues going on that people might think are just normal parts of life that really are common but not normal? What are some things you found there?
Yeah. Well, you know, whether it's a lesion that comes up on the skin, or sometimes it's just as simple as whether it's that joint in the toe that wasn't hurting a week ago, whether the hands are tight in the morning when I get up, do I have something that itches that didn't go away in a day or two or wasn't there last week? Little signs like that, you know, we have to look for that.
Well, if I have something that itches that wasn't there last week, I'm hoping that it's food related, right?
Yes. One of my teachers told me in school, whatever that is you got, get rid of it before you come back in this class. Yeah, hopefully we don't take it to that extreme. However, like so many of us, well, I'll give it a week and then I'll give it another week and then it can get ugly. So here again, when I use the word systemic, that means, you know, it's all encompassing. And sometimes the fire, once it gets on the inside, it's not as easy as taking an anti-inflammatory and being done with it. You know, it's the same thing that you were mentioning earlier, too, about the fasting. You're going through, as you said, at the same time, you're stopping that digestion process. You're also increasing another aspect of the function of the body, and that's the elimination process. So when you stop the digestion and the energy associated with the digestion process, the body can now take more time and energy on the elimination process of that, helping to detox the body. That's how that cleanse is helping so much. It's able to strengthen the ability and the time that it needs to eliminate.
Something I meant to touch on when I was talking about fasting are a couple of things that I noticed when I was doing that 10-day fast. And I've done some shorter ones, maybe some 5 days, some 3 days, and there are benefits there. But I did, you know what an in-body machine is? The body fat check that you stand on and it's...
Heard of it, yes, yeah. Yes, yeah.
They're really accurate. They're really detailed as far as what it breaks down. It tells you how much water is in your muscle. It tells you your muscle mass. It tells you how much lean muscle you have in each of your limbs. It really breaks things down. So I did that the day before I started the 10-day fast. So I have my baseline. I'm not going to share what my body fat was. It wasn't terrible, but it
You're
also
not
wasn't
bragging
great.
About
I'm
that,
not, yeah, yeah, I'm not bragging about that one. And then I checked it again the day after the cleanse. I had always been under the impression from reading books like Arnold's Modern Day Bodybuilding and cruising around on the bodybuilding.com forums. If you miss a meal, you're going into a catabolic state immediately. Your body's going to start eating away all of its muscle. You're going to start shrinking up. I had always thought that fasting, you're going to lose a good bit of muscle, but it's just one of the prices that you pay. I found that not to be the case because at the end of the fast, I had only drank water for 10 days. And I had lost 28 pounds, okay? 28 pounds, but it broke it down. Only 1 pound of that was muscle. The rest of it was water and fat. Because my body had gone into ketosis after a day or two, it was just burning off pure fat, and my body did what it's supposed to do. It was not eating away muscle because that's not really an advantageous source of fuel for your body, right?
Exactly.
It wants to go to fat.
Yeah, right.
So, and another thing I noticed during the fast was that I was able to think so clearly. No brain fog. Sometimes I'll catch myself grasping for a word. When I was fasting, I had more mental dexterity than I have ever had in my life.
Which is beautiful because that's hard to give back up after you've reached that point, knowing that a lot of that was acquired through overconsumption of energy wasting, if you will.
It was hard to give up, and then again, it wasn't, because I could walk by a leaf on a tree and it looked tasty to me. I was so hungry at the end of those 10 days. Another thing I noticed, and I hope this isn't an overshare, but I was having bowel movements the entire time, every day, like clockwork. And even though I wasn't taking in food, my body was still passing solids that
right.
had just been building up in my intestines over time. And some of it looked like foods that I had never eaten.
Yeah.
So I know that my body was getting rid of things that were building up in my system.
Coming back circle to what we were just talking about, because you shut the digestive process down in the body, now the elimination process came out. See, the body actually has three different, it goes in a 24-hour day period. We go through a digestive part, we go through a part where we are eliminating, and then we go through a part where we're assimilating everything that we took in. And the problem with most American diets is that digestion period actually is occurring between 12 o'clock noon and 8 o'clock at night. Well, why? Well, because we're upright and we have all these intestines 17 plus feet. So we don't do very well digesting laying down. So we need that motion. So when we're upright between 12 and 8 o'clock is when we should be consuming our food so we can digest it. Now, we go to bed at night and say from 8 until about 4 in the morning, this is when we assimilate the best. The body's relaxed. It's not having to focus on anything. There's no fight or flight, no stress-related issues for the most part, except for whatever that dream might be you're having. But now the body gets to assimilate. So a lot of times with my patients, I say, if you really want to take a nutrient and assimilate it the best, take it in the evening so that you can assimilate it during that nighttime period. Now, here comes 4 o'clock in the morning. Guess what? Now the body wants to eliminate that by which it had to digest through the day, and it's done assimilating all the nutrients from what it digested, so now it wants to eliminate. So 4 o'clock in the morning to about noon, that's the best time to have those movements in a perfect world. But what do we do in the American diet? Well, about 7 o'clock, we start throwing food in us. So you were talking about the 12-hour fast. The benefit of that waiting until, say, 10 o'clock before you consume that food is the body still has the ability to eliminate. In our American diet, when I start putting in that food, bacon, egg, sausage, or the egg McMuffin, well, now I've stopped the elimination process because now the body went, whoa, hold on a minute. Now I've got something I got to digest. Got to stop that elimination thing. Here comes our constipation. Here comes our backup. Here comes our lack of a bowel movement without a cup of coffee. And then maybe it's one a day because now we have shut down that elimination system too early and it had to go into digestion. When you shut down that process, that gave that body all that time to get rid of some of that elimination that was probably months in the waiting.
I can attest to the fact that you and I are regular because you and I share a bathroom at the office, and we're competing for time in the mornings.
Jockey for position on that one.
We're definitely getting those 3 before noon. I can attest to that.
Yeah, you're going to have to start the night shift. We're going to have to do something out there. Okay. All right. Well, that's a good one to end on that one for today. All righty then.
Hey, you know, actually, one more thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap up. When you're recommending intermittent fasting to patients and someone says, oh, I could never do that. I get so hangry if I miss a meal. What do you say there?
You know what? That's one of your specialties. So give us an example on that. Good question. What's your go-to for that when a patient asks that question?
When someone feels, quote, hangry, it means they get in a bad mood when they haven't taken in food. And what's really happening there oftentimes is the body is used to maintaining a higher level of blood sugar. And when someone doesn't eat for a period of time, the blood sugar starts to crash. So you get a blood sugar drop that causes irritability. So when a patient says that they could never do it, I recommend push through for a day or two. Let your body reset, because once your body is able to increase its metabolic flexibility and start to tap into burning fat as a alternative source of fuel, as opposed to simply depending on glucose, your mood will be a lot more leveled out. Your mood will not be determined based on food intake, and you won't feel hangry from missing a meal. You're able to intermittent fast, you're able to go for a full day without eating, and your mood will still feel level. So you don't have that blood sugar roller coaster that you're on. Your body feels more in a state of homeostasis, and you're going to be burning off more fat.
And people around you like you a lot better too.
Yes. Bingo. You want to wrap it up?
Hey, for this time, yes, because you know us, we could just keep on keeping on. So
let's go get some lunch before we get hangry.
There you go. All right. Great day again. Cheers.